Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor and ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. This is Tech to Go, a monthly fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists of the CPA Technology Advisor. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Hi, this is Darren Root, and you are listening to episode 26 of Tech to Go. Today we have three of our regular guests with us. One of them is a new regular guest. We're going to have Randy Johnston, Dave McClure, and our new regular guest, Renee Lassert. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I also want to take the time to thank our corporate sponsor, ADP, for sponsoring us. They keep us on the air. So, Randy, I'm going to start with you. Just tell us a little bit about what's going on with you today.
Well, you know, we've actually been using a lot of the new communication tools today. We've been using a little bit of the new Office Communicator Release 2 product, which has pretty widely improved, actually, voice over IP and video phone conferencing, as well as some desktop sharing capability, and have actually been working on getting it integrated into our voice over IP system and Exchange servers so it is fully integrated like it should be.
So Office Communicator, can you kind of, just give us a general overview of what Office Communicator does and why, we might want to be using that?
Well, it is an instant message, but more of a unified messaging communication tool from Microsoft. It is a strategic initiative that Microsoft announced some years ago. And as it turns out, I think it's going to be very useful to businesses of all sizes. And as we see this come down market more, I believe that you'll find that the quality is good enough to support auditors in the field or people who are working with clients at great distance. And again, I've probably used it 8 or 10 times today already.
So you're using probably what, the instant message component? Is that what you're using?
Well, it's actually all one component, and yes, do have the instant messages up. For example, Dr. Bob Spencer actually found a little micro USB converter that he was purchasing and made me aware of it and asked if I just wanted to get one with him. I said, great. The component was so inexpensive that the shipping was going to be more than the product itself, I think. But in the one panel, it actually has the ability to do the voice over IP calls, to do the instant messaging, to do the video calls, as well as to share the desktop, which is the new feature in the last version, as well as a multi-way voice conference, if you'd like to do such a thing.
So,
and you said you used the quality, you had it today a couple times, and the quality's been good. That's always been my challenge with the voice over IP.
It often has been a challenge in all sorts of ways, Renee, and this one is good enough from both a voice and video that I think I'm ready to put my name on it a little bit. Obviously, the issue here is the congestion on lines, but I demonstrated it to a CPA firm in New Jersey this week, and we were doing two-way video the whole time while sharing a desktop. So we actually got the full experience of instant messaging, which we didn't use too much while we were in the video conference section, but the ability to run the whole application via Office Communicator, and the voice was great. I spoke with my partner who was in San Antonio this week. That was probably Tuesday or Wednesday. He had attached with a cellular phone. I noticed he was online because of the presence indicator. And when I got a message from him, I just clicked on the Call Him Now button. And through his cell phone, we had a beautifully clear conversation. That was about 7:45 in the morning Central Time.
So was he on his cell phone? I'm sorry, Darren. Was he on his cell phone via a web browser? Or did you actually call a cell phone line?
No, he was on his computer. with a broadband cellular card in the computer.
Wow.
And we were talking via his computer, and I got to tell you guys, I think his connection with me on Tuesday or Wednesday was better than the one we have right now.
Well, that's a question, Randy. This is Dave. Are you on it now?
I am not on it now, which is a great question, and that's exactly what technically we've been integrating this week, is to take the Microsoft Office communicator and tie it the rest of the way into our voice over IP phone system so everything is integrated the way that it should be.
Because I know last fall, you know, I was very big, if you're traveling internationally, on using Skype for routine office calls because I found the quality very good. But, of course, when we tried it the last time out, the quality, perhaps because I'm on a satellite connection here, but the quality was definitely not good enough for this podcast.
Yeah, understood and agreed. And, you know, since our time of talking about that in the fall, obviously Skype has come out with their new version 4, which, again, much better video conference quality. And interestingly enough, they now have Mac-to-Mac or Mac-to-PC desktop sharing and have announced that they'll put in PC-to-PC desktop sharing in the product. So I've also actually made 3 Skype calls today because I've left Skype and Office Communicator running simultaneously. For those that are on Skype, they can reach me that way, or those that are on the Office Communicator, they can reach me that way.
Is Communicator going to be a Skype killer?
Don't think Communicator will be a Skype killer, as it turns out, because it is connected to your own internal network. The good news on that is it's more of a private communication system with some outside capability, whereas Skype is pretty much, as I would say, in the wild, if you will, and so it's used by people all around the world. You know, I was actually just taking a look to see if I could see the number of people online right now, but it's typically 9 to 10 million users at night that are on the product, and it looks like it's 8-plus million online right now.
Randy, I've been trying to get square in my head as I was looking at Office Communicator on Microsoft's website. It seems like there's this enterprise version, but then there's a version that's much less than having your own, I guess, or communicator server.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of explain to me what the various levels of this is?
Well, there are multiple levels, but the kind of the way to think about it is you've got the server side of the world, which you either have the Enterprise Edition or Standard Edition, and then you license your clients. The Enterprise Editions have more phone system integration capabilities in them. But what we're noticing is with the Standard Edition, which is what we believe will be available to be used on the small business server versions of the products, it looks like you can get a phone system integration done with that as well. We're actually using the open source voice over IP technology, and that we're able to do the integration looks like pretty much straight in. It's working satisfactorily enough that we're getting our presence indicators pulled through and some of the features, but we wanted to test it a little bit more before we rolled it out to everybody.
So you're actually running a server, a communicator server at this point?
We do in my NMGI operation have an Office Communicator server,
okay.
And we think it's also interesting because with so much hosting going on, we're noticing that people are hosting Office Communicator servers just like they host Exchange email or SharePoint.
I've got to tell you guys, I went over to Indiana University the other day and watched a demo of this. The university has put it in, and you know they have 8 campuses. Apparently there's this next component where you can hook onto other campuses. I don't remember what the terminology was for that, but you could extend your range. And boy, the ability to go into a live meeting, make a phone call, be on your BlackBerry and see presence of people was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, that feature, which is basically a federation of directories, allows you to communicate or connect different organizations together. And my consulting organization has actually federated our directory with other consulting organizations around the country. So even in our unrelated businesses, we can see presence of granted employees inside those organizations. So typically it's business owner to business owner, but we can actually do video and voice over IP conferences with no expense related to that. And again, we've been very, very pleased with how that goes. Scalability, certainly a question. Quality at certain times and under certain conditions, a question. Is it new? Yeah. Is it good enough to be a viable substitute to work with clients in what I would call a face-to-face fashion? You know, probably so, because today I've had at least 5 video conference calls where I was working face-to-face with people in different states.
So what kind of cost is associated with doing that, Randy, on a fairly small scale?
Well, Dave called it right because, you know, of his international piece with Skype. I mean, a free entry point is Skype, and I would actually suggest that firms might consider that at this point because you can use a fairly inexpensive webcam. We're going to suggest like a Logitech Pro webcam, which is about $100, to give you full motion color video with a microphone. There is a pro version of that cam that's available for your laptops for about $80. So fundamentally, once you've spent about $100 on hardware and free software, you've got everything you need to be able to do video conferencing and up to 24 users simultaneously in a conference call.
But the communicator server, I mean, you have to install that as well?
Now, if you're using Skype, no servers needed because it's a true peer-to-peer system. With Office Communicator, yes, in your business, you'd have to have your Office Communicator server, and then, of course, the Office Communicator clients. One interesting little feature, like you pointed out, for the live meeting in the Indiana campuses with Office Communicator, they've introduced free Microsoft Office Live Meeting, which used to be minimum $30 to play, fully integrated inside Outlook. So it actually is buttons and menus inside Office 2007 at this point. So if you want to initiate a live meeting, you can do it right from inside Outlook and do a meet now or whatever.
Well, it's definitely very cool stuff, to say the least, from what I've seen so far. I'm going to come back and talk about Google Apps in a little bit, but I wanted Dave to kind of give us an update. We've all heard about the stimulus package and everything that's going on with that, and I'm hoping Dave can tell us if there's any IT components in there that's going to change our world.
I think there are, actually, Darren. It's there are 3 portions of the stimulus bill that talk about technologies. And let me do the biggest one first, and that is to digitize all of the healthcare records nationwide. Now, I think you're going to see a lot of the money for that being passed down to the state level and organized at the states. But where I find this very interesting is for any accountant or any accounting firm that has clients in any part of the healthcare industry, this is going to be a major undertaking for them that's going to require all of the document management skills that they can pull into play. So I see out of that piece alone a substantial IT piece of interest to accounting firms. Secondarily, though, there are 2 other pieces of it that relate to broadband, and specifically to getting broadband out to some of the underserved and unserved areas. The amount of money is not great, I'll be honest with you. They got pretty stingy. About 1% of the bill is going out to rural broadband. So it's not like it's a huge priority, but it's split into 2 different ways. The bulk of the money goes through the Department of Commerce and through their National Telecommunications and Information Administration, and that's sort of money that's going to fund not exactly research projects, but projects that can help advance the Internet nationally. The rest of the money, about $2.5 billion, is going to go to the Agriculture Department, and that's more specifically aimed at getting broadband out to rural areas. What isn't addressed, and what's going to become a major part, I think, in the future, is there's no money in here for education. There's no money in here for community centers to teach computing skills. So at some point, we're going to have to come back and look at those pieces. But in terms of the hardware and IT, these are all three programs. And I'll just throw out one last piece because I know other people have some thoughts about this. And that is on March 10th, the Department of Commerce, NIST, is going to have a series of open meetings here in Washington, D.C., just to kind of get some feedback and figure out where all of this is going to go and to figure out who wants the money.
Well,
found interesting in looking at the stimulus was just the total amount for medical records online was like $17 billion. Is that right, Dave?
Yes, yes. It's a huge amount for that project alone.
And which just sounds amazing to me, you know, from a government perspective doing that versus startups like us doing it. But, you know, that's a probably a separate conversation unless Darren wants to go there.
Well, $17 billion, and that's going to be – is that going to be largely hospitals and doctor's offices, Dave? Is that where you see that landing?
Yeah, it's got to start there first. And I think Renee has an excellent point. I mean, realistically, they could have done this in four different ways that put the job in the hands of small private companies and probably gotten it done sometime in this century as opposed to – handing it, and I'm not an anti-government guy, but handing $17 billion to 50 states and say, here, go figure this out, is not a very efficient use of funds, I'm thinking.
Well, and I think, you know, it's the type of thing that if they just mandated saying, by 2010, we want, you know, 50% of medical records that you're submitting to be electronic. You know, I don't know what the right time frame is, but that's, I think a mandate would actually force the market to happen and, you know, maybe give a tax credit or something like that. Maybe that's why they're doing it, but just the poor cash just feels risky to me that you're not going to get that much for the money.
Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, I was going to say, I think you've just defined the problem with the entire stimulus bill. They're just throwing money at it. And one of the things where government could be enormously helpful and isn't stepping in at all is establish the file format that you want all this data in so that everybody's using the same format. I'm not seeing any move in that direction yet.
And that's exactly what I was going to say, Dave, is, you know, I've actually got a fair bit of information on electronic healthcare records on my Accounting Software World website because I teach that topic fairly frequently. And there are actually, well, in fact, it's worth hearing. The organizations who are working on EHR standards worldwide that I know of include CHI, CCHIT, IHE, ANSI, the Healthcare and Information and Management Systems Society, the American Society for Testing Materials, OpenEHR, Canada Health InfoWay, Worldwide Consortium, Clinical Data Interchange Standards Consortium, and the EHR Lab Interoperability and Connectivity Standards. Those are the ones I know about. And right now, we're working off of multiple standards, HL7, DICOM, ANSI-X12, ISO TC215, and CEN's TC251. Sounds like alphabet soup, doesn't it? and sounds like we're talking accounting standards here. But literally, there are, you know, 15-plus organizations on the standards. There's at least 7 or 8 different standards that don't interchange. You know, this is going to get pretty ugly because we're going to throw a lot of money at an ill-defined problem. Now, on the other side of it, I'm 100% believer in electronic healthcare records, and we know that the UK has spent billions already trying to standardize the healthcare records for the UK with limited but making some successes.
Feels like we're going to throw an awful lot of money at a problem that needs to be solved, but with not a lot of forethought.
Probably not. You know, the $17 billion won't even scratch the surface of it, unfortunately. So I'll go on the line and say I would have thrown this in the hands of, you know, some startups to work on this. Even Microsoft has had a personal healthcare record initiative that they've been working for 6 or 7 years, and that's actually one of the people I talked to at CES this year in Vegas.
Yeah, and why not just make it more of a tax credit? But, you know, we're probably getting – we could go on a while about this, but to me, if it's a tax credit, then and you're forcing people from the mandate to actually get there, that actually would be more interesting because it carries more in the free market area. But
yeah, and I almost feel like I'm an earmarker when I say this. I do appreciate some of the communication lines getting to rural America because I guess, Dave, where you live to a degree and where I'm at, there's a whole lot of people that don't have internet access yet, and it could be definite help to those communities, although I actually still am a little hard-pressed to see where it would help them with local businesses. It actually drives them more global.
Well, and just to swing back and kind of close the loop on the stimulus package, I think the biggest thing I could say about the tech parts of the stimulus package overall is, so what? I mean, $17 billion is a huge amount of money, but I don't think we're going to get the bang for the buck. And when it comes to the broadband stuff, let's put this in perspective. Over the next 2 years, they're going to spend $7 billion. Verizon, on its own, in that same period, will spend three times that much just to put its new Fios system out into more communities. So, you know, this, while certainly there are rural communities that are going to be able to make some use of this, there are two things wrong with it. First of all, the money comes with major strings attached, and already the broadband companies are looking at this and saying, we don't need this. We don't need the money badly enough to put up with all the strings that the administration has attached to them. And secondarily, we're going to spend more than that anyway. And the rule is, if you were going to spend the money anyway, you can't get any of the new stimulus funds. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this works out. But in the long run, it's really questionable how much it's going to stimulate the economy.
So, to kind of close that, Dave, is there anything that the practitioner that's listening out there should be thinking about or doing to position themselves in any way as it relates to the stimulus package?
Yeah, I think two things, and I know Randy and Renee are going to have their thoughts as well, but certainly I would be looking to see where the money's going to go at the state level. If you have healthcare clients, start looking at that Microsoft project because, you know, they've got to be a player in this, as do other major software companies. And then secondarily, if you work with any of the telecoms or cable companies, you're going to want to look into not only the Department of Commerce hearings on how are we going to spend the money, but the Department of Agriculture and what their grants program is going to look like so that you can, if you're well-positioned, jump in there to get your clients some of that money. Find yourself a good grant writer.
Randy, Renee, any thoughts?
You know, Dave hit them pretty much square in the tooth, I think. Those particular opportunities, if your clients are in those sectors, are great. There is much that needs done in healthcare, and there's much to be done, so perhaps a little bit of that money with your clients and you're helping them along is a good choice.
Good. Well, what I'd like to do maybe now, guys, is transition over. I didn't give Renee much of an intro since he's new to our group here, but Renee Lassert is the CEO of Bill.com, and Renee's going to be a regular guest with us going forward. And so one of the things I'd like to do now is just spend a little bit of time talking about Bill.com and what's going on in Renee's world. So, Renee, tell us what's up.
Well, thanks, Darren, for having me on the program and looking forward to these conversations. It's fun to kind of get outside the box and think about trends and strategies that are going on in the marketplace. So with Bill.com, just for folks that don't know, we do, simply put, online bill payment for business. We have a lot of workflow and a lot of document management attached to that so that it does make it very easy for accountants to work with their clients when it comes to client bookkeeping and record keeping. We integrate with packages such as QuickBooks and Intacct, and the integration is obviously important to the experience for the customer. And I think, you know, the thing that we're seeing, and I think, you know, the reason when Darren and I talked, why I was interested in coming and talking on the program, is that, you know, this notion of cloud computing is evolving quickly and is something that does impact and will continue to impact the accountants and practitioners out there serving their clients. I was at a conference yesterday for specifically cloud computing up in San Francisco, and the chairman and CEO of Salesforce is up there talking about cloud computing. He had a nice video they talked about, and then he started just listing the number of users and businesses and how many people and how many documents and changes to their database they had. And it is happening very fast. He showed growth charts of how fast they're growing. And I think this is going to extend very quickly into the accountants world. And we did a partnership with the AICPA's CPA to Biz last summer, and they're big believers in this, and they've been very heavily marketing our service. And it's interesting. And so I have a few points on why I think cloud computing is interesting for the accountants and how it relates to what we're doing. But, the primary thing about the cloud, everything in the sky, is that you can be anywhere and you can do anything. And the beauty of what we're doing in particular is that it basically gives you all of your record keeping and transaction details anywhere. So when you think about accounting software, you might have the record of your transaction. If you're using QuickBooks Online or you're using a hosted version of QuickBooks, you might be able to see that transaction, but you actually can't see the details behind it, such as the invoice image or such as the approval flows within the company, between you and the company, such as any notes that somebody might have or a clear check image. And the beauty of cloud computing is with our essential services, we can pull all this together and we can make it all available to everybody, anywhere, anytime. And so, kind of full circle back with the Office Communicator, the point of that, and I think the reason Randy's, talking about it, is that it sure would be nice, and as much as Randy travels, it sure is nice probably for him to be able to be connected to folks without having to have a different phone system in every hotel he's at. Now he's got one that's on his PC. So I think that's just the power of where things are going, and maybe I'll start with that, and if you have questions or suggestions, Darren, that you want me to talk about specifically, I'd be happy to dive in.
Well, I can throw out I still am the managing partner of a small accounting firm, as well as the executive editor of the magazine. And I can tell you, we are trying to figure out ways as fast as we can to engage with our clients and collaborate. I guess those are the two things I think about, is engaging and collaborating. And collaborating in the clouds makes a lot more sense to me than trying to rig up a system to collaborate differently than that. It also allows me to use any computer I want. So whether it's my MacBook Pro when I'm traveling or my PC on my desk or whatever it might be. So I'm really excited. And as you know, I'm a customer of Bill.com and a big fan. And I've really enjoyed working with it. Randy, what's your thoughts?
Well, I was just actually listening to you and wishing we were all an Office Communicator so I could kind of show you the pictures that go with this. But Renee is absolutely right that just having the ability to collaborate with clients, and I'm actually looking more for even a single unified phone number to be able to provide to clients, or a single contact ID. And I think Dave has been more at the forefront of that than anybody I know for quite some time. But the idea here is instead of having a K2 phone number and an NMGI phone number and a personal phone number and a cell phone and so forth, I just like to have one universal contact ID, if you will. And if I'm available, I'll pick it up. And if I'm not, I'll get back with you as quick as I can. So for us, that's been really a big difference there. Cloud computing itself, though, is of high interest to me. I was doing a lot of my materials editing for the year this past week, so my head's in the thick of this almost too far. But I actually was working at how services like Twitter lead into blogs, which lead into personal networking, which leads into business networking, trying to explain how the topic of our last conversation really fits things together, if you will. And reality is a whole lot of these things are driven by cloud services. And in part of the preparation, noticed that an Intel announcement has really made processing power so cheap that reality it is disposable and it can be centralized effectively. So I'd actually reviewed some Google data centers and some Microsoft data centers and other methods to get them built. And frankly, it makes a whole lot less sense for us to have servers in-house if we can get reliable services out of house.
And I think that's the transition that we're going through right now.
And, you know, just one example, a pretty big example, I think, of the power of cloud computing is that we had a new release of the product. We actually push new features out, every 6 to 8 weeks, and they're always driven by, the actual customers. And so, and I don't know, Darren, for example, if you've noticed a bunch of the new stuff, but the power of being able to actually help customers faster instead of waiting a year, such in the desktop world, or maybe 2 years for a new product to come out, is hugely beneficial for learning and for customer experience. The other part about that is we had the release at 9 o'clock, and I had actually forgotten about it. I had a dinner with one of our partners, and I got back at 9:15. I logged into email. I saw a bill that I had to approve for the company, and I logged in. And as I'm logging in, I'm like, "Oh, there's a message saying that we're going to be down for the release," and we were already done. Every one of our customers had and could have all the new features, and it was less than 10 minutes to get that to them. And if you think about, how powerful that is, if you're Intuit, as an example, in QuickBooks, and you've got 3.5 million customers using it, getting them all onto the same version of your product is really hard work and also, not very easy for the customer.
So I want to revisit just a second something Randy said about that kind of universal ID or PIN number. I mean, Dave, what do you know about that? What's the strategy there?
Well, there really isn't a strategy, and that's the problem. I mean, there have been a lot of private initiatives, but what we're really trying to move toward is an era in which, by some mechanism, and I know we've looked an awful lot at biometrics, for example, by some mechanism, you have a device who knows it's you and can authenticate and ties together all of your communications in a single source. Now, I know the cell phone companies are working toward this. Right now, for example, Verizon, working off my BlackBerry Storm, I can get visual voicemail, which gets my voicemail onto my device, along with email, along with SMS, instant messaging, all of those pieces. But it's not there yet. I mean, it's crude and ugly. Obviously, that's where we want to go. Anywhere you are, using any device you wish to use, it knows it's you, and it brings you what you need to do what you want.
I don't know about you guys, but it seems to me like the rate of change and the rate of new things that are coming out is escalating, not de-escalating. Do you guys sense that at all?
Yeah, clearly. Clearly it is. The rate of change, and in fact, one of these times we ought to talk about what impact that has on people, because one of the things we know is that one of the huge backlashes to any period of intense technological change is a massive upsurge in religious fundamentalism. I mean, we've seen that time and time and time again. So what does all this portend for our culture going forward? That may be too heavy for this podcast, but it's something we ought to think about. You're right. The rate of change is accelerating.
Well, and I agree. In fact, I've pushed it so far, Darren, as to say I think we're going to see more changes in the next 5 than we've seen in the prior 10, maybe even 15 years from a technology perspective. If it wasn't for the economic conditions, it might have even gone faster than that.
Yeah,
no, Andy, sorry, Renee. I go back to if I'm a small practitioner and I'm listening to this podcast, where do I go from here? I mean, how do I keep up?
Well, that was going to be one of the points I was going to make is that I've had a lot of people ask me, are businesses or accountants, are they ready for SaaS? Are they ready for the computing in the cloud? And my answer is always, well, I can't answer that, but I can tell you, and then 5 years from now, are people going to be buying software in retail anymore? Definitely not 10 years from now. And at some point, it's going to change. So, just like with everything, you have to kind of, get comfortable with it. But the sooner you understand it, the more positive effect you can have in your practice. And I think this is actually, Darren, one of the things that you do is you try to get people to take advantage of it and use it as a way to get share through your outreaches, right? Whether it's the your work in your firm or the magazine, and that's actually I think what all of us are trying to do is if you take advantage of it now, it's a real opportunity to actually take share because You get a lot of things for it.
You know, Randy's been the master at this for a long time, trying to help educate people and move them along this technology continuum. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to do as well. But there, and I love all the new tools. I love SaaS. You know, I'm enjoying Facebook. I'm enjoying Twitter. All these things that we've been talking about. Office Communicator is somewhat new to me, but I really like it. There's just so many things that we need to educate the practitioner and the listener on. And Randy, you've done a fantastic job at this for years. Do you see people keeping up with this so far?
In general, I don't see them keeping up with it, and I understand comfort level because they're happy with where they're at, so they actually haven't tried to progress. In some cases, they maybe haven't wanted to spend the dollars, and I get it from that side too. But this is a time frame where it's a good time to reinvest in yourself, your firm, and your clients. And I believe that if you will start to make the shift, you can provide better client service by using some of these new tools. You can communicate more effectively using some of the new tools. And as a consequence, maybe be able to work a little less hard to get the services delivered.
Well, I think well said. Gentlemen, we've bumped up against 40 minutes or so, and I had set a goal that we would try to be 35 to 40 minutes going forward. So I'm going to put Google Apps off to one of our future discussions at this point. I want to say thank you again to ADP for being our corporate sponsor, and also thank you to you guys. Again, this is episode 26 of Tech2Go. Thanks. Bye-bye.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisors' other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106. Or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via talkshoe.com.